Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Kevin, how you doing?
Good. I'll turn this on. This working for you?
Yeah, I can see you now.
Okay, great. I normally do the chat audio only just to, in case we hit bandwidth issues.
Oh, okay.
But well, I'll show you that I am a real human being.
Okay. I am too.
Excellent. Excellent. So, great. I appreciate you taking the time to do this. If you're ready, I'm going to kill the video.
Yeah,
and let's just get down to it if you're all set.
Yeah, I'm ready. So you can hear me okay?
I can hear you okay. I still see your video. If you go to the middle of the screen, there's like a video camera, and you just click on that. Perfect.
That's good?
Yep, perfect.
Got it. All right, you know what? Let me grab my earbuds, okay?
Sure.
Might be better audio for both of us. Give me one sec. I actually thought you were doing a video.
Oh, no, they're audio files.
What's that? I'm sorry?
I said they're audio files.
Perfect. So by the way, Kevin, I think we were in the same class. I remember seeing you around.
You... Really?
I'm pretty sure. What year did you graduate?
What year did I graduate?
Yeah, because you went to Berkeley, right?
No, I'm a professor at Berkeley.
No, I know you are, but I thought you went to Berkeley as well.
Nope, I graduated Brandeis University in 1987 and got my master's from UMass Boston in 1998.
That is so weird.
I graduated in 1991 from Brandeis, sorry, entered in 87.
I could have sworn I remember seeing you around before. Really weird.
I started teaching at Berkeley in the spring of 2005.
Got it. Got it. That's when I saw you. Okay.
Okay. I mean, I was there. Were you a music business major?
No. Okay. I was MP&E, and maybe I'm stealing the thunder from the interview.
I did teach concepts of mathematics, which was like people would take a placement exam, and like anybody who had to take acoustics had to take a placement exam, and if you didn't pass that, you'd take concepts of math, and I may have been teaching it, but maybe you just saw me around.
Yeah, that's interesting. Anyways, sorry. Yeah, whenever you're ready, I'm ready.
All right, cool. All right, so let's start with your year of graduation and your major.
Okay, so I graduated in 2006, and my major was music production and engineering.
Cool. And what was your primary instrument?
Well, my primary...
Or your principal, I think they call it, right?
Yeah, principal instrument was guitar. I think I knew when I played a couple different instruments when I started at Berkeley, not very well. I think I figured out pretty soon that I wanted to do MP&E. So shortly after starting, I think my focus really shifted to that. But my main instrument, principal instrument, was guitar.
Yeah, I've heard MP&E majors say that your principal instrument's the soundboard.
Pretty much, yeah. And I was really more interested on the production side. So, you know, working with artists and taking a song and turning it into a record. I almost always had someone much smarter than me working the board and all the equipment. But just the way that the major is constructed at Berkeley, it was, you know, production and engineering were part of the same major.
Right. Right. Cool. And by the way, you graduated, was that the spring of 06?
Yes.
Excellent. All right, so we'll get to your whole story and what you did before later. But for now, tell us about your current job. What do you do?
So my current job is I'm a sales rep for Oracle. So Oracle is a very large enterprise software company.
Well, I give the 2-cent version of what they do because I've heard the name, but I'm not actually sure what they do.
Well, Oracle is the second largest software company in the world. Started in the late 1970s as a database management system company. Mm-hmm. Since then, has grown to sell applications, hardware, middleware, everything kind of up and down the technology stack. So,
what's middleware? I know it hardware and software. Software's programming, hardware's the equipment. So, what's middleware?
Middleware is kind of what makes all of your applications work better together.
Like operating systems?
It's kind of a step in between operating system and your applications. And to be honest, I don't cover the middleware product, so I'm far from an expert on it. And by the way, I'm in sales, so that's the extent to which I know of the middleware products.
Gotcha. So Oracle sells, it sounds like, a very large suite of software. Sounds like maybe less consumer-based software than actually running the computer software.
Definitely not consumer-based at all. So we basically, if you are a business and you need technology to run your business, we want you to buy all of your technology from us. So you're
doing, I think they call it B2B sales, right?
Exactly, business to business sales. So I go in and I talk to, and I actually focus exclusively on the retail vertical. So, you know, companies like TJX, who owns the TJ Maxx stores and Marshall stores, or Ascena Retail, they own a number of retail brands, Barney's, Brooks Brothers. These are, you know, Coach. These are a few of our customers, and my job is to kind of go in and meet with, you know, everyone from the CIO who owns IT for the entire company all the way.
Chief Information Officer.
Exactly. Yeah. To the business users, and essentially position and work with others on my team to position the retail applications, and try, you know, I'm a representative of the company. I try to get them to buy the software. It's pretty much as simple as that.
So a little more details. So then are you visiting companies which already use your product and just try to make sure they get the right updates and the right new options? Or do you go out to places that aren't using your product and try to get them to use Oracle's products?
It's both. So the former is definitely easier. But, you know, a lot of times the latter is where, you know, you make the money, you know. So I have a quota, right? I mean, it's not a strict kind of, you know, variable compensation only, like commission only comp structure. You know, I have a base salary, but, you know, you're really, anyone that's in this job, you do it to make your commissions. In order to get those commissions, I have to get to a certain number of closed revenue each year.
Hey, do you mind sharing what your quota is?
No, not at all. So my quota right now is $4.4 million.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah, it's a long way to go. you know,
And can I ask how much a typical deal is? I'm sure they vary.
They do vary quite a bit. I mean, it can be anywhere from, you know, a couple hundred thousand to, you know, 10 million. It can vary quite a bit. As with any enterprise software purchase, can, you know, it can vary quite a bit. It depends on a lot of things, the size of the company, the product scope. Depends on a lot of different things.
Well, if you put together a 10 million deal, there went your quota for the year.
Yes, exactly. those are few and far between. You don't get one of those every month by any stretch of the imagination, but it's a great job. I really like it.
I was gonna say different numbers. My father had a software company. He's retired now, but he would tell a story for their software, which again, business to business. They had a $1 million quota, and this was 30 years ago.
Okay.
And one day, they had like a structure where, you know, the first quarter million you got like 2%, and then the next quarter million you got 5%, and then it went up to like 11% once you were over your quota.
Accelerators. Sure.
Yeah. Yep. And then one day this guy put together a $4.5 million deal.
And, nice.
You know, and like made more money that year than the CEO.
Yeah. That can happen. If you're coin operated, it's you know, if it's something that's important to you, then it can be a good place, a good career to be on. It's a lot of work, it's a lot of stress, it's all consuming, and you know, things don't always go to plan. Sometimes you lose deals.
Right.
Many times you lose deals. Mm-hmm. But you know, sometimes you win. And when you do win, it can be good.
I'm sure it's really variable. But do you mind sharing, like, what percent, like when you think about how much money you expect to make in a year, if you wish, what you made last year, like what percent was the commission versus the salary?
I'd have to go back and look at that for that specific year.
I mean, just in general, do you expect the commission to be more than the base salary? Or because I spoke with people where they get commission, but it might boost their pay by 10%.
Okay, yeah, no, it's more, you know, a typical enterprise software rep might be on like a 50% plan. So like 50% base salary, 50% variable comp, you know, and the goal is to get to a place where, you know, you can live off of your base salary. Right, and then anything that you make in commissions goes to savings or, you know, college for the kids or a house or what have you.
Gotcha. So, do you travel much for your job?
I do. Yeah. So I still live in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. We actually just recently moved to Amherst, Massachusetts. My wife is doing a nursing program out here.
Oh, nice. At UMass.
You got it. Yep.
Cool.
But my territory is actually New York, so I'm going to the city probably like every other week on average. I'm going somewhere. It's almost always New York.
Well, that sounds like driving or bus as opposed to having to fly all over the place.
You know, I've come to know and love Amtrak quite well. I actually prefer the train. And, spits you out right in Manhattan. You don't have to deal with taking a cabin from the airport, and you know, you can get work done on the train as opposed to having to drive.
I like to take a train, but where do you pick that up from Amherst?
So I'm going to be doing it for the first time next week, and it's going to be from Northampton.
Oh, didn't know it went through there.
Yeah, I think it's what they call the Vermonter.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Cool. So would you go to New York? I'm sorry if I missed this. Is this typically a day trip? Or are you staying there for the week? Or
it's usually for a couple nights. So usually what will happen is, you know, so like you said before, I have some customers that are existing and I have some prospective customers. So usually what happens is I'll have some meeting lined up with a current customer, and I'll try to get prospective customer meetings tacked on in addition to that. Kind of one of the oldest, you know, sales tricks in the book is, hey, I'm going to be in your city, you know, or town next week. Do you have 5 minutes to meet? And, you know, a lot of conversations might just start like that. And then, you know, from there, the entire sales process can take anywhere from 6 months to 2 years.
Wow. Okay. So definitely not a summer job sort of thing.
No, not at all. It's a big commitment.
In fact,
yeah,
I'm
you really
imagining
got invest time.
Your paychecks being fairly lean then in your first couple years.
Yes, they are. Yeah. So, I mean, it depends on, it's a tough field to get into because there is upside, you know, after time and when you're working for the right company and frankly, with a lot of luck. But, you know, so it's a very competitive field. You do need to start, you know, most people will start kind of as like a business development rep. So these are the people that, you know, you have a quota, but it's really a number of calls or emails that you might need to make to prospective customers to try to build pipeline for, you know, for the business. A lot of people will start there, including myself. I started kind of a step above that as an inside sales rep. These people don't travel, and they're usually teamed up with an outside sales rep, which I am now, mm-hmm. and they kind of work together to close business. So that's kind of the way into it, and it's a grind.
Sounds like the sort of higher position.
Exactly. Yeah, that's where you wanna be. There's very few people I think that kind of just want to be kind of a career inside sales rep, although you don't have to travel. When you're an inside sales rep, you don't have to go anywhere.
Frankly, I would say that sounds like you got pretty lucky with New York as your territory as opposed to, I don't know, Texas when you live here in Massachusetts.
Yeah, and it was more, I'm lucky more for the fact that there's a lot of retail there. So,
right.
Yeah, so I, you know, there's a lot of good retailers there that we do business with. And, you know, you can, that's one of the things with sales is that a lot of times when you first start off, you know, you'll have you might have a territory that doesn't frankly have a lot of opportunity, but you might have a quota that looks nearly the same as someone that does have a lot of opportunity. So it's kind of a long, it's a lot of work to get started. That's for sure.
Gotcha. So, hey, what fraction of the time are you traveling?
It's probably about 50% of the time, but it's rare that it's not me that's scheduling the travel and scheduling the meetings. So I actually have a fair amount of flexibility in that respect. Like, it's not like someone else is scheduling the meeting for me and saying, you know, show up at 9 a.m. in Atlanta, you know, and then, you know, watching my expense report like a hawk to make sure that I'm not doing anything that would make me, you know, too comfortable on the road, God forbid.
I'm sure the company reimburses you for travel and hotel and all that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But go on. So you get to set up your own meetings.
Yeah, and so it provides some flexibility, which I think is important because, you know, the glamour of business travel wears off very fast. And it just helps to have some flexibility, you know, especially once you start having a family. I mean, I'm married now. We don't have kids. But, you know, that's going to be an important thing to be able to kind of schedule travel around personal commitments to the extent that you can.
Sure. So, and hey, could you describe, if you're on the road half the time, and I get it, you're meeting with clients, do you just pay courtesy visits to your big customers?
Yeah, that will happen as well. Yep. So there's a fair amount of kind of, you know, taking people out to lunch, taking people out to dinner, introducing them to my manager or the managers of our division. There's a fair amount of, I don't know, I guess schmoozing for lack of a better term, but I really like it because I'm working with people. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not the type of person that would want to be kind of behind a desk all day, just, you know, working with numbers and never interacting with people. I like to be out there and interact with people and help them and, help them in their own business objectives.
And just to clarify, because you said that you deal with, let's say, large retailers.
Yeah.
Was that sort of, were you given big retail as a territory, or were you given New York and then the primary thing was big retailers, or how did that shake? It's like, if there's a big retailer in California, do they send them your way?
So it's more that the division of my business focuses exclusively on retail, and then we segment to territory from there. Gotcha. So there's probably about 30 of me across North America, and then we kind of divvy up the territories that way, and then there's global representation as well.
Understood. So hey, you've described a bit what the travel is like in life on the road, but and yes, I agree, the train is totally the way to get to New York.
That's right.
Yeah. But I was just thinking, because I'm sure you know from Boston, it sort of sweeps down through Rhode Island and Connecticut. So.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And it was from out of Boston, it's, you know, the Excel Express, so it's much nicer where they go.
Right. But tell us about the half the time that you're not traveling. What are you doing then?
Well, so like today, I'm kind of working out of my home office. And frankly, it's a lot of time emailing and on the phone.
But do you normally work from home then?
Yeah. If I'm not traveling, I'm working from home. Okay. Again, it's a big thing for, it's a huge flexibility to have. Frankly, I don't know. I can't picture myself going back to an office job right now, to be honest. You know, I think in the right circumstances, I could see that happening at some point down the road. But I just feel like I'm just the type of person that I do better with, you know, autonomy. I'm a kind of self-motivated person. I don't need someone looking over my shoulder telling me what to do. Mm-hmm. So I would do well with kind of either being at my home office, getting stuff done here, or, you know, being on the road out in front of customers.
Sure. So you said emailing. I'm sure you're setting up all those meetings that you then travel to.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm like a part-time travel agent, it feels like, especially when I need to sync up with and work around, you know, five or six other people's schedules. It can take a lot of time to get that stuff planned. But yeah, and, you know, there's just a lot of, you know, these are long, complex sales cycles, and there's a lot of planning and strategy that goes into it. So it can, you know, a lot of times you just need to, you can't be in front of the customers all the time. There's a lot of time kind of planning internally. I have a large team of people that help me. It's not just me. You know, any given opportunity, I might have between 3 and 5 people that are helping me, you know, present the product and talk about the underlying technology and whatever.
Like when there's the big meeting, you call in the techies.
Yeah. So I have people that like will actually demonstrate the product. You know, they're the product experts, and they can they will go and present the product to the prospective customer.
I see. And speaking of which, like, how much technical training do you get? Because Oracle's putting out new products all the time.
Yeah, for sure. So we get trained on the application. Mm-hmm. But you know, for my role, it's really more about business value. So I need to know what the software does. I need to know how it works. But you know, at the end of the day, you know, customers want to know, what's this going to do for my business? So that's kind of where the training really focuses for me.
Understood. So you say, just go back, most of your time is just setting up meetings and staying in touch with customers. You do much else, or does that pretty much fill the day?
No, I mean, so like I said, there's a lot of strategy to the opportunities. So, you know, a typical opportunity might start with, say, an RFP, and these where a request for proposal.
Uh-huh.
And this is where a customer will document, I mean, literally hundreds of requirements that they need from the software.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where there's a lot of planning going in with my team as to how to respond. And then from there, strategically, how to kind of present, you know, the value proposition for my company in the best way. And then, you know, from there, even once a customer decides, you know, hey, we really like your, you know, like your product, we think it could be a good fit, there's still a lot of work that needs to happen in order to actually, you know, close the deal. So a lot of times I will end up doing like some financial analysis, basically like, this is what, you know, your total cost of ownership might be for over, you know, 3 to 5 years. But you know, at the same time, this is where kind of financially we think it will impact your business. So I'll spend a fair amount of time doing that. And, you know, it can be a lot of time with PowerPoint to create the actual proposal. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of, it's a completely different type of sales, right? I mean, B2C or business to consumer sales, it's high transaction, and frankly, even some types of business to business sales are very high transaction, and there's not a ton of kind of planning work that goes into it. But, you know, these are different. I might work on maybe, you know, less than 10 opportunities over the entire year.
Right. Like, I'm doing the math here, and it sounds like you're probably averaging a deal a month.
It really depends. It really depends.
Right, because some are bigger and take longer.
Yeah. You can have one that kind of, like the story that you told, you can have one that kind of closes out your entire year, you know, or if you're a new rep starting in a development territory that doesn't have a lot of opportunity, you might not close anything your first year. It really all depends. Or you can be in another situation where you have, you know, a ton of opportunity, things just kind of work, and you've had time to really develop your territory, and you can maybe do a deal a month, you know, just, it all depends.
Sure. How many years have you been with Oracle? We'll go further into it later, but how many?
3.5.
So you keep talking about these new salespeople, right, trying to grow crops in the desert, so to speak.
Yes.
Was that you once upon a time, and then did you get moved into a juicier field, or did you just kind of luck into it from the get-go?
Yeah, it kind of was. I mean, this isn't my first sales job. You know, I think after Berkeley, I don't know if you want me to go into this now, Kevin, or not, but...
But it sounds like the short version is you got a pretty good territory to work with.
I did now. I do now. I did have a year where I was, you know, where I was really just a new rep in kind of a barren territory, and, you know, I was just proving myself and learning and just trying to, you know, get whatever I could to try to get better at my job and prove to my managers that I can handle larger opportunities. So there's, I think every rep these days, we'll go through that at some point.
Gotcha. That's very good to know. All right. Got another question for you, which is, what if the criteria for doing these interviews is that you enjoy what you're doing?
Mm-hmm.
So I heard one thing that you were talking about, the flexibility. But what else, if anything, do you like about your job and what you do?
So it's very challenging. There's a lot of ambiguity. So, you know, no 2 days are the same is kind of the cliche, but, you know, there's just a lot of ambiguity, and it's kind of up to the rep is kind of the quarterback of what's going on and the opportunity to try to figure out a way to, you know, close that deal. And it's not a simple thing. You're taking a lot of different factors and a lot of different, you know, attributes about the opportunity, and you're trying to kind of bring it all together so you can figure out what is the optimal process to, you know, to try to win the business. And I find that fascinating. I mean, I think one of the things that attracts me to music as well, you know, and it's not a sequential or a binary, you know, proposition to perform music or to write music or produce music. You know, there's a lot of ambiguity into it, and you need to take all that ambiguity and organize it in a way that makes sense, you know, and tells a story or closes a deal. So I think that's probably my favorite part of the job, actually.
Very nice. Okay. So, hey, let's take it back now to 2006.
Yep.
There you are with your music production and engineering degree. I'll take it back a little further if you wish, but I'm guessing you weren't leaving Berkeley thinking, yes, time to do, you know, sell some software.
So let me see.
Yeah, let's sort of follow kind of what you did and your whole headspace.
Sure.
What was going on.
So I think maybe, I don't know, maybe my third or fourth year at Berkeley, I kind of became more interested in the business aspect of music and the just business in general. And
so you might have majored music business.
I could have, but
you figured it. I get it. Where you figure it out and you have 1 year left to go and you're like, well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's, you know, so I guess at any rate, it was, I kind of found that was really what was appealing to me. And I didn't, you know, I was working in a recording studio at the time, or was interning in a studio at the time. I probably worked there for maybe a year or two while at Berkeley. Mm-hmm. And I kind of saw that if I really wanted to go down that path and try to be, you know, in the production of music, then I kind of had to follow a certain path that would take me probably to one of three cities, you know, New York, LA, or Nashville. And it was, I kind of just saw that that career, I just didn't see it as right for me. When I first decided to go to Berkeley, it was really because I was passionate about music. I wasn't thinking about what how the career would actually be structured afterwards. So I think I kind of saw that, but at the same time, I was really becoming interested in the business part of music. Mm-hmm. So after I graduated, I started kind of looking for a way to, at first the thought was, you know, can I essentially be an entrepreneur in the music business? And I was looking for ways to kind of do that. But I also had the constraint that, you know, I didn't want to be, you know, living at my parents' house for 5 years trying to come up with, you know, a great business idea. It's just that wasn't for me either. So kind of shortly after graduating Berkeley, spending some time just, you know, working whatever job I had at the time, I think it was landscaping, and also trying to kind of work and be an entrepreneur. I mean, I think I really soon after that realized that an MBA would be a good thing for me. And I think it's because it served two purposes. One, you know, I like the idea of entrepreneurship, you know, and I found that really interesting, and I wanted to, I don't know if there's a way for me to be an entrepreneur in music, but I wanted to get an MBA so I really knew what I was doing and what I was talking about. Mm-hmm. But two, I also saw that it could help me get into kind of a more, you know, stable and rewarding career that is outside of music. And so I can kind of, you know, I basically try to have the best of both worlds.
So it sounded like, you know, you were sort of like, if music happens, great, but your priority was to get a good career, and if it wasn't in music, so be it.
Yeah, you know, there's this kind of, and I was definitely, I definitely felt this way at the time, that, you know, I was so passionate about music that I didn't want to turn my back on it. You know, and I think I felt like for a while, if I got a career somewhere else in another field, then I'd be turning my back on it. But that's not the case. You know, it's just simply not true. You don't have to make money from something for it to be your passion. In fact, you know, there's a lot of arguments, I think, that would kind of point the other way, right? That making your career and making your living from another field kind of allows you more flexibility with what you're really passionate about, or in this case, music. So
would you believe me if I told you that you are not the first person who has said something like that?
I'm sure there are many. And, you know, I think but it's important, because I think when you're at a place like Berklee, and like I said, I was the same way, you know, I think there's that kind of, even if logic is telling you that, you know, maybe you don't need to be making your career from this field in order for it to still be your passion, I think there's still this, with a lot of musicians, there's still a real desire and a fear of going into a different field. So I'm not surprised that a lot of other people have said it at all.
Cool. So how long, so it sounds like you decided pretty quickly, like, are we talking a few months after graduation? You're like, yep, business school.
Probably about a year.
A year of landscaping and what, temping?
Landscaping, doing whatever I could to make money. And it was probably about a year, and I figured out that an MBA was the right thing. So here's the thing with business school, is that there's, you know, to really be a good candidate, you have to have a couple of years of work experience in business, right?
Right.
Or something. I mean, they'll consider
not planting bushes.
Right. And they'll consider other careers for sure. But you know, they still want to see some work experience. So what I ended up doing was a management training program at the Hertz Corporation, or Hertz Rent-A-Car. And it's essentially your training to run your own branch. And so I did that for a couple of years.
Is Hertz like a franchise where they just give you some training and then you put up your own money? And
they have some locations like that, but most locations in North America are corporate, I believe, unless something has changed.
Okay, so you're like kind of a store manager, but first.
Exactly. So I was
could
on.
Can I ask how you got that position?
You know, it was like a. I think it was like a Craigslist search, to be honest.
You saw the ad, you applied.
Yeah, and you know, that's. I mean, to be fair, it was tough at that point in my life. It was tough to get interviews. It really was. I mean, unfortunately, I think there's a bit of a stigma or a lack of understanding about, you know, what a music degree is, and I found it hard to get in the door at that point. I just did. Ironically, music kind of, I think, really helped me as an MBA or Masters of Business Administration school candidate. It really helped me stand out. And I think actually I was a better candidate because I had that unique background of having an undergraduate degree in music.
Gotcha. Interesting. So you went to Hertz. You said it was a management trainee thing.
Yep.
So, like, how long did the training go? Did you end up running one of these places, or?
I was just effectively offered a branch to run, but I had been accepted to school, so I kind of turned it down. I think I was like an assistant manager at the time, and then we knew that a branch was coming open, and I kind of knew that management wanted to consider me for it, but I had already been accepted to my school, Babson, for my MBA.
So yeah. Just management trainees, basically, I imagine there's some training and then you're out there working?
It's kind of on the job training. I mean, Yeah, these branches are pretty small. It's not like an airport branch. It's kind of a small neighborhood branch, and there might be two or three staff for the whole store. So, you know,
One
you could
manager, one management trainee, and
and an assistant manager is usually kind of what the model was.
gotcha. Okay, so yeah, you did that for a couple of times. You applied, you got into Babson.
Yeah, got into Babson, and then I started Babson in 2009. I did a full-time MBA program, and I finished in 2011.
Okay, so there you are with your MBA. Congratulations.
Thanks.
So, what next from there?
Well, so I think that I knew at that point that, you know, I took on loans to do my MBA.
Can I ask, because you said you're married now, were you with your wife at the time?
I was not.
Gotcha.
Nope. Yeah. But I think I knew in 2011 that I needed to kind of build out the stable part of my career at that point. So I kind of knew, I knew that tech sales was kind of the what I wanted to try to do.
How did you know that?
And it's a good question. I don't know if I can really answer it. It's kind of in my blood. Like there's you know, I ended like business salespeople in my family. And I kind of just, there was something that was appealing about the job for me. I think a lot of it was just the autonomy that I kind of saw myself having, and the fact that I was a challenge, and there was just something appealing about it for me. And I guess I didn't know for certain that was going to be the career that I was going to have. You know, it was something that I knew I definitely wanted to try, and you know, here I am.
Right, you had family members who could describe their
Yeah,
job. So
yep. Go ahead.
yeah. So in other words, I get it. Like my wife does software quality assurance, and I know all about that field.
Right. And I mean, it's just that it's, yeah. I mean, I learned a lot about the field, and I knew enough to know that it was something that I wanted to try to do.
Okay, so sorry, we'll get back on track here. So you're like, got my MBA, want to try some software sales. And
Yep.
so what next? Apply more places?
So I ended up going to a small technology company in Lowell, Massachusetts,
Another
called.
Craigslist ad?
No, this was a little bit different. I found that having the credential, it was a bit easier to kind of go out and proactively find something. So I think this was maybe like a kind of LinkedIn, you know, networking type thing. And I ended up going to interview. I was an account manager while I was there. So this was kind of more of one of the other models of sales jobs that you described before, which is where, you know, a smaller portion of your total compensation will be commissions. You know, it was more kind of a customer service job, I guess, in a way, in that you're working with an existing account and making sure that they're happy. You're also trying to grow the account, but it's not like it wasn't like a traditional sales job like I have now.
Gotcha. So you worked there. What was that company?
I'm sorry, the company was called Plum Choice.
Okay. So another kind of very technical thing, or business to business again?
It was definitely business to business. The unique thing about that company is that they would white label their service. So what that means, like take for example, I think I could talk about the customer. Yeah, I think I can talk about this customer. So one of their customers is Verizon. So let's say you have, you know, the Verizon DSL internet service at home, and one day you can't get online. You know, you call into the Verizon tech support centers. Their scope of responsibility really ends at ensuring that you have internet in your house. Once they ensure that you have internet in your house, there's really nothing else that they can do to help you. So
Okay.
what Plum Choice provides is Verizon Premium Tech Support. So this is actually a call center that Plum Choice operates, and they provide an additional level of service for additional fees if desired. But we white label that service, or Plum Choice white labeled that service as, you know, Verizon Premium Tech Support.
Got it. So in other words, they don't know that it's, or the customer does not know it's this other company.
Exactly. Yeah. To the customer, they're thinking, oh, you know, this is, you know, this is nice. It's an additional service from,
I see.
You know, from
so,
Verizon.
So white label basically means we'll be whoever you want us to be.
You got it. That's a good way to put it.
And there could be two other people who are all, you know, you could be doing three tech calls, and this one's from Verizon, this other one's from a totally different company.
You got it. That's exactly it.
All right, so you worked there. You're not there anymore, so what happened?
So I was there for a year and a half, and I think I decided that I wanted to get more into a traditional sales role. Mm-hmm. So Oracle was doing a lot of hiring at that point, or a lot of recruiting, I should say, to build out kind of an inside sales force for a company that they just acquired.
Now, were you at the point in your career where recruiters were contacting you?
At that point, I believe that I was. Now it's something like, honestly, I can't even keep up with it. I get a lot of them. Sales talent is hard to find. I'm not saying I'm a great sales rep, but it's just, you know, sales talent is hard to find, and you know, recruiters are always, especially if they can get someone from Oracle, they're really incentivized to do that. So yeah, I get a lot of those. At that point, I honestly can't remember, but somehow I found out that Oracle was hiring, and you know, I went to interview.
Cool. And got the position. And I'm sorry, was that your current job, albeit, as you said, tougher territory in the first year?
So that was more of an inside sales role. So at that point, I don't think I had the ability. I don't think I could have really had an opportunity or had a chance at an outside sales role. I think I was just too inexperienced. So I started as an inside sales rep. So I kind of built off the account management experience.
Do they get commission, by the way?
They do. Yeah, they do. Inside sales reps do as well. It's a little bit different of how it's structured, but yeah, they do.
So you did the inside sales rep thing, but I think we discussed earlier that the outside sales rep is kind of higher pay, higher status. It's what you hope to work your way up to.
Yeah, I think there's very few people that I think want to be kind of a career inside salesperson. There are a number of people that go up through the inside sales management track. But you know, if you want to be in sales, you go, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Then you're shooting to go outside. So, I think after about a year of the inside sales thing, I had the opportunity to move to a field role or outside sales, and I took that.
I think you said the first year a little bit tougher territory, then you slid into something.
Yeah, first year in the field was tough, and it was expected, and I knew it would be, and you know, so I guess that was the good thing. I didn't have any false expectations going in. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was a tough first year, but since then, you know, things have changed, and here I am.
Excellent. Hey, I got one other question. We sort of skipped over it, which was business school itself. Like, how did that stack up relative to going to Berkeley? You know, time commitment, difficulty, whatever. I'm curious.
It's a good question. I think I might have to think about it.
Obviously, you're studying different things, but, you know.
Yeah. I think for it. The short answer is it depends. So it depended on the class at Berkeley. So, you know, a lot of my kind of the more performance and kind of softer skills of music, if you will, a lot of those classes I think were much, much different than Babson. But I mean, a lot of the classes that you might take for, depending on your major, so for MP&E, you know, a lot of, you know, acoustics classes or anything that might be, you know, mathematics is heavily applied. I mean, a lot of that did kind of, you know, it did stack up.
Gotcha. Oh, no, wait, it says the call's on hold. Wait, what the hell? Hold on a sec.
Kevin, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still there. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. Sorry about that. I had a call come in and I just declined it.
Okay, yeah, I just set my call on hold. So the last thing I heard was you were saying that if you're doing like math, like the math stuff, like acoustics at Berkeley, that the classes felt kind of similar.
Yeah, depending on the class, they could definitely stack up to some of the classes at BAPS. I mean, you teach economics, so you know that there's a heavy component of math to a business education.
Oh yeah, I do statistics also at Berkeley.
Well, there you go. Yeah. So and there's some statistics that you need to learn in for business school as well.
Sure. I guess I was asking. And how about like difficulty level? Obviously, it's different level, but you know, some people at Berkeley might feel very intimidated to go to a place like that.
And think, I see.
You know, or you know, in terms of right, how hard you had to work.
Yeah, I mean, it's that's really the key is how hard are you willing to work? I mean, I think I honestly may have, when I first started at Babson, I may have had a little bit of kind of self-inflicted self-doubt because I was the only music person there. You know, everyone else was either, you know, they came from a completely different field. It could be engineering. They could have been a consultant at Bain, biomedical engineering, So I think I had a little bit of, self-doubt at first, but I realized that there was really no reason to have that. I mean, music is a different field. It's not a reflection of your intellectual abilities by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, like with anything else, you get out what you put in, and it was a lot of work to succeed for sure.
Cool. All right, let's move on to the third part of the interview. Third of three.
Okay.
So you did talk a bit about how you feel connected to music still, but could you go into details? What is your current relationship with music?
Right now, it's not much beyond just listening to as much different kind of types of music as I can and kind of scheming for ways to have more to do with music. It's just really hard. I mean, I have a very time consuming job, and you know, it's hard to kind of have, you know, listening to it is one thing, right? I mean, I always have time to listen to music and explore different types of music. And that's really what drew me to music in the first place, was listening. I do still have some desire to be more involved in music, but I just don't know exactly what that is yet. You know, I don't see myself, it could be something as simple as, you know, performing. Like my father actually is, my father and mother actually coincidentally met at Boston Conservatory of Music, which is now part of Berkeley.
Yeah. Oh,
cool. And now he's a lawyer, and you know, she was a social worker. She retired recently. So I'm, you know, I've kind of followed in their footsteps in a weird regard. But you know, my father, you know, he's in a couple. He plays saxophone, and he's in a couple bands that go out and perform. You know, he still actively works as a lawyer, but he goes out and he performs with bands. And you know, I guess I could try to do something like that, but that's not really what, you know, I want to do, I guess. So I'm still trying to figure out what exactly I would be doing in music, but gotcha. You know, I still think a lot about it for sure.
Oh, and actually, quick callback to your job. You did mention time consuming job. I'm sure it varies week by week, but how long is your typical work week?
Well, as people say, you know, being a rep at Oracle, it's not a job, it's a lifestyle. that probably goes for a lot of sales jobs, but it's tough to say because like my day really never ends. You know, like I when I'm working from home, I'll probably work a standard, you know, day like anyone else would, but you know, I'm never really, my job is about communication, and when you're chasing, you know, when you're actively working on a deal, it doesn't matter what hour of the day it is. I mean, you need to do what you need to do to move things forward. So it's tough to say because it's more of a lifestyle than it is a job.
For what it's worth, as a college professor, I totally get that.
Right.
I'm interviewing you, and this is technically my vacation.
Ah, okay, got it. Well, you know exactly how it is.
Yeah. Okay, good answer. All right, next question is, thinking about your current job and back to your experiences at Berkeley, is there anything you feel that your Berkeley education did particularly well to position you to succeed in your current job? When we look back and you say, yeah, I'm doing better at this B2B sales because of Berkeley, because of this. As opposed to if you'd gone to, you know, liberal arts school or...
Honestly, like I talked a lot before about kind of the ambiguity of music and the ambiguity of my job now. I don't know where else I don't know where else you really get that that skill set other than from an art, you know.
You talked about similar. You mean the skill set of like kind of making something that's still ambiguous?
Organizing ambiguity. So whether you're, you know, a performer trying to improvise, or you're a songwriter trying to create a song, you know, or you're a music producer that's trying to record a record, there's a lot of variables. I mean, an infinite amount of variables, right? Mm-hmm. And sales is the same way. I mean, there's just, it really is. It sounds maybe kind of cliche or a little odd, but it really is. I mean, my it's not like if you're developing, you know, software, which of course is challenging in its own way, you know, or if you're an accountant. I mean, there's specific rules and it's very logic based, you know. Mm-hmm. Music and I think my job are kind of really about trying to find a way to apply logic to things that are not logical, you know, trying to take all that ambiguity and find some process that organizes it. You know, and that might be a little bit out there, but that's really kind of what I think of that, what I think of how Berkeley, you know, prepared me.
Gotcha. Great. So let's flip that question around now. Which is, of course, you went to Berkeley knowing it gave one degree, a Bachelor of Music. But, you know, now that you've been through a lot of experience since then, is there anything you look back and you say, hey, it would have been really useful to have learned this when I was at Berkeley, and Berkeley could have taught it to me, and they didn't?
It's tough. Yeah, go ahead.
No, it's just, you know, anything you feel was kind of missing from your education or would have made your life after Berkeley easier?
No, because I knew at that point that I wanted to study music production and engineering, you know. I think there's probably an opportunity, you know, more at the high school level to, you know, try to better prepare kids for, you know, what an actual career is like, right? And what out in the real world. I mean, that's, I don't know, that's probably, that conversation is outside the scope of this interview, I think. But, I mean, as far as Berkeley, no, certainly not. I mean, I knew what I wanted to do at that point. I wanted to study music. You know, and it doesn't always need to be about a career anyways. You know, I've never regretted going to Berkeley. I admit that it was a tough time when I was kind of, you know, immediately after and I was trying to find a job to make money. Right. But, you know, I've never regretted it because it's, you know, that's what I wanted to study. I knew that's what I wanted to study. And it's still an education, even if I'm not, you know, monetizing it today.
Sure. There have been other people who said that they answered much like you in that they can't think of anything. I mean, there are also people who have said things, and that doesn't necessarily mean you regret going to Berkeley.
Gotcha.
You know.
Yeah. No. And that's fair. I guess that comes from a place of where, you know, I think when I wasn't necessarily educated when I graduated Berkeley on, you know, what that career, well, I think at that point I was, educated on what a career path in music would be for my specific field of music production engineering. But I think before going to Berkeley, you know, I didn't have that. I didn't know that for any career. So I think I was kind of just responding to that. And, you know, there's probably more of a, at the high school level, there's probably more of a an opportunity, at least from what I think, to better educate kids on what, you know, what careers are actually like and what they are once they get out in the real world. But
right.
No, yeah, that's a different conversation.
Sure, sure. No, that's a really interesting response. I like your take on that. I certainly recall just going to a liberal arts college as a way of punting all that decision-making down the road. Okay, so another question for you.
Sure.
Is sounds like you've been having a very successful career, and you figured out what you wanted to do pretty quickly and are doing it. As I'm sure you can imagine, there are some recent Berkeley grads who might be in that same difficult position you were in, but have not figured out their path. And also perhaps people in their last year at Berkeley staring out into the big scary world and wondering what they're going to do. For either or both of those groups, do you have any advice?
I think you've got to follow your heart and your mind at the same time. You know, you need to figure out what's important to you, and, you know, you need to put that within, at least to some extent, you need to put that within the context of what's actually possible in the real world, you know. And I guess I say that meaning that, you know, you might love playing the guitar for 8 hours a day. That may or may not be able to lead to a comfortable living for you. So if having a comfortable living is something that's important to you, you know, you gotta follow your heart and your brain at the same time. But at the same time, you can't, there's risks in only following either one of them. You know, if you only follow your heart and what you're passionate about, you can lead out that kind of logical part about it potentially, right? About what other things are important to you, having a comfortable life, et cetera. But there's risk going the other way. If you don't think about what's passionate to you, you risk having a boring, miserable life, you know? So I think you want to make sure you figure out what's important to you, and you react on that.
Gotcha. Okay. And, to be a little more specific now, because you're doing software sales. I've spoken with at least one other person who's in software sales. First of all, like, does everybody at your company have an MBA who does your job? Because I spoke with somebody who did software sales, you know, B2B, who did not have an MBA.
No, they don't. And I think that's, you have a lot of different types of people in sales that get there a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. You know, so, I mean, I have people that I work with that have the same job as I do that are, you know, older than me by 20 years. You know, and they had a very, very different career path to get into sales. Mm-hmm. I think I do feel like, I mean, I'm in a good place now for my career as far as being a, you know, kind of an enterprise software sales rep. And I think the MBA definitely accelerated getting here. I think I probably could do it without it, but, the MBA accelerated. You know, I think, sure, to be fair, like I said, it was tough to find a job at first just on a music degree, you know, and that's unfortunate, but people just don't necessarily understand it. People that haven't come from that background, you know, if you're a recruiter and you're trying to fill a spot and you have 100 people applying for it, you see that someone has a music degree, it's easy for that recruiter to weed you out. It's kind of giving them a reason.
Right.
I mean, just being perfectly honest. I mean, that was my feeling at that time. But I believe that I could still do what I'm doing now without the MBA. I think the MBA just accelerated getting here.
And then, so what about people who've graduated? Because this interview, when it goes on my blog, will be indexed under, you know, software sales.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so people who listen to this interview presumably are going to be the people who out of the, you know, 40 plus interviews go, oh, software sales, that could be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So for people who are potentially interested in your field, what would you recommend? Like, what should someone do to break into that field?
So I think there's different ways to do it. I think from the kind of main, there's a few different ways to do it. If you're specifically interested in sales and you don't have necessarily like an industry focus or a product focus at this time, then I think maybe kind of just doing what I did, I think is a good path. You know, so a lot of like the, you know, Enterprise has a very similar management training program to Hertz. They take a lot of entry-level people. And I think there's a lot of, you know, there's other kind of entry-level sales jobs that are difficult, right? I mean, there's definitely ones where you might start as like a commission-only rep. You know, that could be tough, but there's a lot of kind of entry-level sales jobs where you really just need to prove yourself. And, you know, from there you can build on that. And, you know, I think if you really want to be in sales, you know, figure out what the end game is. You know, I kind of always knew, not always knew, but I knew that I kind of wanted to be in, you know, an outside enterprise software sales role, selling applications. You know, so I kind of, the series of moves I made before that kind of went there. You know, maybe you want to be you sell, you know, high-end real estate in New York. Still a great sales job, much different than what I do now. Mm-hmm. You know, but if you want to do that, then there's kind of a different series of steps to take. But I think the common denominator is that it's going to be tough at first. You know, you need to put a lot of work in at first, and, you know, you're not going to really necessarily see the upside right away. So, you know, make sure you want it.
Sure. Great advice. I just have one last question for you, which is, you have the mic, as they say, and you're being recorded.
Mm-hmm.
So is there anything we missed or anything else you'd like to say?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think it's I'm glad you reached out, Kevin, because I think it's an interesting project that you're doing. And I think it's, you know, it's important for people to kind of take things like this, I think, into the decision making process. You know, do I want to go to, you know, Berkeley, or what do I want to do after Berkeley? So, I mean, I think that's, I'm glad you reached out. I think it's a cool project.
Thank you very much. Well, hey, I really enjoyed chatting with you, and best of luck. Sounds like you're on a great path. Hope you hit that big deal.
Me too. Like,
there we are for the year.
Me too. Donations accepted, by the way, until that happens.
Excellent. Well, look for a message from me on LinkedIn in the very near future.
Awesome. All right. Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you. Bye now.
Okay, take care.